Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
We do a little thing here on the show on Friday called the Brightest Conversation in Hamilton Radio. We bring one guest in to talk about this and that and the other. Often a lot of the other, but some of this and that too. And it is always a great thing when we can get someone in who everybody in town knows their work, I think. And I hear people sometimes complain about the work, which we will talk about today, but they never say he can't do the work because everyone agrees. He's probably the best at what he does in all of Canada. His name is Graeme Mackay. He's the editorial cartoonist for the Hamilton Spectator. How are you?
I'm just doing great. How are you, Scott?
Have you made plans for Monday so that you will be able to see going forward after
this? I have my glasses.
Do you?
And I'm paying attention to Shelley Marriage and hoping that she gives us a good weather report.
Yeah, it's...
It's a little too early, I guess, right now. It's only Friday. But I bet you anything, it's going to be cloudy.
There was... This may be urban legend, but there was a woman who used to work for the Spectator. Now, I may have this story all goofed up, Graeme. Mm-hmm. So you may have heard this or not, but back in the early, early days of the National Post, when that paper started, and they were just blowing through money, like they were going everywhere and doing everything.
Good times for the newspaper.
Yeah. There was a woman who eventually worked for the Spectator, if I've got my story correct, and again, it's been a while, who was sent to... I think there was supposed to be an eclipse, a really unique one that was only visible in Mongolia. And so they sent her, and she was standing in this field. It had taken thousands of dollars to get her there. And she's out in this like field in the middle of rural Mongolia to write about this world's most unusual eclipse. And it was completely covered in clouds and couldn't see a thing. I don't know. Does that make us a pessimist or a realist or a glass half empty? I don't know, but I kind of expect that.
I hear that we have a 50-50 chance. The further north you go, there's the best chance of seeing it is in Mexico when it comes across the Pacific Ocean. That's where you have least amount of cloud cover, according to the data. But, you know, have we had any sun this week? I guess we had a little bit today. But
have we had any sun this year? I mean, remember, it wasn't that long ago. We had, wasn't it January or February where we had like 2 hours of sun in the whole month?
It's been sad.
I kind of have this expectation that we're going to have 15,000 people down at Tim Hortons Field and a million people, they say, in Niagara.
Well, 100,000, I read, they're coming to Hamilton. Where are they going to go? 100,000?
Easterbrooks.
Easterbrooks.
They're just going to line them up and feed them foot-long hot dogs and then stare at the sun.
Well, I can imagine Niagara Falls would not be a pleasant place to be because, I was thinking the traffic is already bad enough. Like, you go along the main drag there where all the expensive parking is, and it's always busy. And where do you park? You got to pay $35? Are they going to jack up the price to like $100 along there?
You got to know that every private parking lot is going to be $200 for between 2 and 5 p.m. And why not? I mean, free market, right? We heard these stories. I don't know if they were true or not, but we heard these stories of hotels canceling reservations and then, you know, rebooking. I don't know. But it's, it seems to me that with all the buildup, and again, maybe I'm just a pessimist, maybe I'm a cynic. It seems with all this buildup, the McMaster giving out 600,000 pairs of glasses. Niagara declaring a state of emergency and all this, it just seems inevitable that no one's going to see it because it's going to be overcast. No.
Well, I guess the other thing is it's the sky will darken and it will happen, I guess, in a short amount of time. It won't be like a sunrise or a sunset. It will happen within like... minutes, I guess. I think. I don't know.
Well, doesn't it go from like 2 o'clock until 4:30 or something where it'll like darken?
Oh.
But then it gets really dark for the...
Yeah.
But here's the other thing I find odd about this is that we're really excited about, you know, the sky going dark. And I'm thinking, that happens every night.
Every day it happens.
It's just like night at a different time. No one I've ever known has ever gone outside at 7 o'clock and gone, wow, where did the sun go? It's dark. I've never heard anyone get that excited.
You do that when you're in like Florida, or, you know, hey, let's go watch the sun go down or whatever.
Well, it's a set, sure.
But you got pina coladas plied in you and stuff like that. That's not exactly what you're going to be doing at 3 o'clock on a Monday. I got a cartoon to do. So,
yeah,
you know, it's going to take a big chunk of time out of my
schedule. You don't plan to have a pina colada going on the front porch, get the cartoon done early?
We all work from home. You never know what goes on at home. But
see, here's a super, Graham, super easy cartoon. Just draw the eclipse and just like put some, make some remote thing. But it's just like a dark circle with a little light around it. And
hey, easy peasy. Easy, right?
Throw one other little thing in there that I don't know what it would have to do with anything. You
figured out my whole game plan on Monday. So
that's right.
Good for
I'll be done by 8:30 in the morning, but I'll tell them I'm working all day. Yeah, it's the beauty of the working from home situation. But no, it's I've got the glasses. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go outside, but I just kind of expect something it may not be. But well, let's hope not. Let's hope, because it's cool. It's a cool thing.
Yeah, it is cool, and I look forward to it. You know, it's. I want to see how my dog behaves, for one thing. It'll be fun to see. Apparently, animals react strangely when such things happen. The birds are apparently going to stop singing. So it's the experience, I guess. Even if it's cloudy, you'll be able to go outside and sort of...
But once again, the whole thing with animals behave strangely when an Amazon person comes to your front porch, too. So it's you know, it's we're saying, you know, a lot of this stuff that we're really looking forward to. It's all stuff we have every single day of our life. It's just...
True.
Slightly different, but I you know what? I'm not going to try and poo-poo on it too much, because I am looking forward to seeing it.
Sure.
And we are having a pool. If they will give us the numbers, we are going to have a pool. How many people does Hamilton Health Sciences treat that day for burned retinas? Because you know there are going to be hundreds of people who ignore all the warnings.
Well, does that actually happen? Do we have like other data from, because these happen a lot. These eclipses are like once every year and a half, apparently. So there must be
in different places.
In different places. But it surely there must be a list of people who have gone blind.
But I just look at our particular North American society now with social media and go, it's social media that's going to make people do stupid stuff to try and get clicks. And I mean, I don't anticipate, you know, Gertrude and Rudolph being out there who are 90 years old blowing out their eyes. It's going to be somebody who wants to get clicks on social media doing something stupid that... Anyway, we'll see. And I suppose you don't have to be 90 to be named Rudolph and Gertrude, but it probably helps. Yeah. It appears, Graham, and I don't know if it appears this way to you, the last week or so, maybe two, it feels like Justin Trudeau is campaigning more than running the country. Do you?
Yeah.
I don't have any belief that he wants to call an election anytime soon, because that would seem to be political suicide the way the polls look. But it's very strange to me that a year and a half out that he would be this campaign-y.
Yeah, he's taken the blazer off, hasn't he? He's rolled up his sleeves and he's in full campaign mode, it looks like.
That's the key. That when the sleeves are rolled up, that's the Justin Trudeau campaign costume.
And he's dangling all these big giant plans and he's trampling on jurisdictions and all kinds of strange behavior from the man.
Which makes you wonder, if he's doing this a year and a half away from an election, how much is he going to spend leading up to a real election, unless we've got one coming?
Yeah. Well, someone reckons that he's had all these good news announcements because next week is the federal budget. And someone has suggested, well, maybe there's some bad news to say in this budget, and he's just dangling all these good news things in advance.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that's a possibility. Although if the bad news is that the financial situation is worse than we expect, I don't know that in retrospect people are going to look at the last week when he spent billions of dollars and said, well, that was wise.
Yeah.
That would blow up in his face, wouldn't it, if that was the bad news?
Yeah. Well, it could be that. Or he's just flailing because he sees the polls. The polls are miserable for the Liberals. The Ontario Liberals did this under Kathleen Wynne in her last year, too, flailing about and dropping a lot of money in big plans that, you know, like some of these housing initiatives that he's brought forward, he's kind of... He you know, he's been promising a lot of stuff over the course of the last 4 years, and it's not until now that he's actually, you know, throwing the money out there. It's a bit of desperation, I see.
Well, it also, to me, seems like desperation because I don't have the quote in front of me, but it was just, was it not just a couple of months ago when he was asked about housing, and he said, look, housing is not my responsibility, right. And now all of a sudden, here, let me fix how it.
Yeah.
But again, I find it very odd that if we're not going to have an election, that we're basically having, I mean, I think the U.S. presidential races are long and cumbersome and drag on forever. This could be an 18-month election campaign.
It could. Well, in Canada, we always anticipate, well, when is he going to drop the writ and all this? And it could be in a month. It could be in 2 months. Everyone seems to think that it's going to happen a year and a half from now. But the way the polls are going, he'd be crazy to suddenly call a snap election or something. But I guess it takes something happening with the coalition for things to happen. But he seems to have everything tied up with the NDP. But who knows?
Well, let me go to that one for a second because Jagmeet Singh was in Hamilton this week, and it also sounded very much like a campaign stop. Jagmeet Singh is the guy who controls all of this. The minute he decides to pull the pin, this whole thing falls apart. When Jagmeet Singh was now doing a campaign stop by the sounds of it, I got to wondering, do Trudeau and Singh know that something is coming?
Yeah. And what does all of his demands, I guess, put on the prime minister have all been recognized, I guess. He's had his dental plan. He's had the pharma plan. What's left in the whole coalition agreement?
Well, have they really been? I mean, have these plans? I would argue that many of these things we can't really afford. And if you want to argue, oh, we need to have a national pharmacare plan, I would say, okay, if that's an essential thing, let's have a chat, but let's cover the people who are not covered,
right,
as opposed to universally giving it to everyone. We can not spend nearly as much, but even the plan, we keep hearing, well, it's really not that impressive. It's got a few drugs here and there, but it's not...
Two drugs, basically.
Yeah, it's not covering everything. So has he really got what he...
I guess he's
wanted?
Laid the foundations for something bigger and broader, and I guess he can go with that. He also brought out... a food plan for kids or something for students.
That was this week with the breakfast programs. Thankfully, we've had one here in Hamilton for years. Michael Andlauer, owner of the Bulldogs, has done it through the Bulldogs Foundation for North End schools. But yeah, that's now.
And that's where I say he's and with the housing, he's been trampling on other jurisdictions, right? So we have a food plan provincially across the province that apparently works well, and he's adding on to it. Which sounds good and everything, but is it necessary? I mean, does it mean that the feds start to control this sort of aspect of provincial jurisdiction, of municipal jurisdiction? It's a weird thing.
And is it even going to happen? And I raise that because somewhere I saw this week or last week, someone reminded that years ago, the federal Liberals promised they were going to plant 2 billion trees across the country. And thus far, apparently 0 billion trees have been planted.
Yeah.
And so these announcements are fine. But it seems like if you, I hate to use this phrase, but if you carpet bomb the country with enough announcements, everybody kind of forgets.
Yeah.
Because there's so many, nobody can keep track of all of them. And then we just sort of...
Right. Well, that's and then you get these. I get these alerts on my phone saying, "Oh, a feed the poor program has been instituted by the prime minister." Well, apparently, this has been announced numerous times, and I'm thinking, "Oh, this is going to be big news." And then I find out, no, it's not. It's just a repeat of something. So,
Jagmeet Singh right now is the most frustrating politician in this country to me, and it's not because he leads the NDP. It's not because of his politics per se. There's lots of politicians with whom I disagree. It's that day after day, he seems to rail against things the Liberal Party does. And the only reason the Liberal Party is able to do these things is because of Jagmeet Singh propping them up. Someone needs to stand the, like, pull him aside and say, you sound ridiculous when you are the cause of this and you're complaining about this.
Yeah, but he's in a very difficult position. He's a party leader, just like Trudeau. They both are in the same predicament in that you know, Trudeau is repelling a lot of the centrist liberals because he's cozying up to the lefty NDP, and the NDP, especially the ones on the left, don't like, you know, him playing along with Trudeau. So it's a difficult sort of situation that they're both in. But yeah, like Singh is supposed to be, he came on the scene as finally we have like this really cool dude with a turban. You know, he's the first really recognizably ethnic leader that we've had on the scene. And he was such a departure from the past, you know, plain old gray-haired leaders.
Jack Layton.
Yeah. And so he brought some oomph, much needed multicultural oomph to the job. And yeah, it hasn't gone well for him, I guess, in the situation that he's been in. But you got to like give him some credit. He has actually made huge strides for the party in getting these big giant national programs legislated.
And so I don't have a, I think you're correct that he has been able to squeeze what power he has to get these things. I don't dispute that. I mean, I think that some of these things would not have happened. The Liberals would not have done this. To me, that's not the issue. It's this ridiculous position that he contorts himself into to try and sound like he's criticizing the Liberals. If this is the case, just you're in an agreement with them. Mm-hmm. Just say, we're on board with this. We're doing it together. And it anything else to me sounds ludicrous.
Yeah, I actually did that cartoon of him turning himself into a pretzel on a lot of issues. So it's you put that idea back in my mind. I might have to resurface that.
Yeah.
But you know, all the party leaders have basically have to play this pretzel sort of job, contortions to the different degrees of their political parties and everything. But it's going to be difficult, I think, for him going into the next election, because you know people are going to say, "Well, what are you, a liberal?"
How do you extract yourself from Trudeau? Like,
why didn't he separate himself? Why
don't
you dump the Liberal Party when such and such happened with a, you know, go through the interference thing? I mean, it doesn't really matter with the NDP, but that's a big black mark on the Liberals. I think with that, they haven't done a lot on that. But there's other circumstances where he probably should have put more pressure on the government and didn't because of his coalition ties.
What's amazing to me is that I'm surprised he hasn't been able to, for better or for worse, you know, some may be supportive of this, some might be not. I'm surprised he hasn't been able to squeeze more out of the Liberals because of what we talked about last segment. The Liberals have to be living in absolute fear of pin being pulled on this coalition, and suddenly we're at the polls. Mm-hmm. If the polls that we see are anywhere close to accurate, the Liberals cannot have an election right now.
Mm-hmm.
So how could Jagmeet Singh not be able to extract more, knowing that he's got every bit of power in this country? He's got more power than Trudeau, he's got more power than Poilievre, he's got more power than anyone right now.
He certainly does, but you know, also money talks, and I don't know if the coffers for the NDP is really that substantial right now. I think the ones who are rolling in the dough are the Poilievre conservatives. So it might be suicide if you have like this major wipeout majority government by Poilievre, and you have two rump parties in parliament. It'll be 1993 all over again, really.
But I look at this like Trudeau has way more to lose. Singh isn't the prime minister. He's never going to be the prime minister. But he has this weird power right now. Trudeau has way more to lose if Singh goes away.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm not lobbying for our government to start spending even more billions of dollars on programs. But I just can't believe that Singh could not extract more than he has here. And you know what? To stand up, if you have to bluff, you stand up and say, we're giving the Liberals, we're in the House of Commons, we're giving them till tomorrow. If they don't do this, we are ending this agreement, and call their bluff.
I think there's one thing also to be said about the fact that he has gotten so much out of the Liberals. You know, the pendulum swings, and I wouldn't be surprised if we get some really horrible news next week. It's happening in other countries where there's just there's no money. The debt is huge. It's out of control. Deficits out of control. Look at Ontario. Ontario now has a $10 billion deficit. A lot of that's just by shenanigans that Ford has been involved in. But there's been so much money going into these other big idea social policies that I think even Jagmeet really realizes that there's not much more money in the kitty to go and spend on big ideas. I think, you know, the pendulum is swinging. The conservatives are going to have to come in, and they're going to have to do the unpopular things. And that's just the way it is. You look at the NDP Liberals. They are the left of center party, mm-hmm. and the pendulum's going to swing eventually, I think.
There was a piece that I read. I can't remember who it was by. This is often the case. I wish I should pay more attention to the name of the writers of these. But somebody wrote that what's happening here is, and it was with this week, with all the additional money that Trudeau is spending. And then again, if we get closer to an election, you just know that the money tree is going to be being pruned like you can't believe. Mm-hmm. That when Poilievre wins, assuming that happens, he's going to be in an almost impossible position because things are going to be such a mess. Mm-hmm. That untangling all these things, there's only going to be two options. Either he has to say, we can't undo this stuff, or he undoes it and it becomes, makes so many people angry because now we have to get rid of the things because they're so expensive. It's almost like the person wrote, Trudeau is leaving a stink bomb for him, mm-hmm. that knowing he's going to get voted out, that we're just going to make it impossible for you to govern.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's going to have to cut. He will cut and he'll get away with it because he's a conservative. And I think a lot of people, they understand that about conservatives. And he's going to have to do the dirty work that the liberals haven't done, like cut the civil service. But he's also going to have to cut, you know, axe the tax. And
he's said that line 20 million times.
Right.
He kind of has to do that.
But then, you know, my criticism of Poilievre is that, okay, well, how are you going to like keep us into the green transition, as we call it? That money has to come from somewhere. If your plan is to improve the environment or the energy sector by buying, you know, nuclear power plants or hydroelectric plants, that takes money. You have to get the money from somewhere. It doesn't grow on trees.
See, I wonder if people now are, if you look at the polls, where environment issues and green issues are on people's checklist is mm-hmm. now well down. Mm-hmm. I wonder if Poilievre wins and says, beginning the first day that I come into office, pipelines are being constructed. We are clearing all the red tape.
But it costs money for all that
stuff. I know, but we own them. We own one of them.
Well, yeah.
Right? So the country owns. We're going to do whatever. We're going to get those pipelines gushing oil that we can sell to Germany, who came looking for it, and France, wasn't it, who came looking for it recently. And like there's four or five countries, Japan, they all want our clean, natural, liquefied natural gas.
Yeah.
We're selling it to everybody. We're gonna draw so much oil out of the ground that like we're gonna sink by 2 inches across the land by next year.
Well, when we're in some pact with Germany to supply them in like 2 years, I think we're supposed to be shipping over the liquefied natural gas.
And if we suddenly can do this, and if that suddenly brings in billions and billions of dollars, maybe we can start paying off some of the things that we've.
But you need refineries. And I don't even know the plan is. Like, how do we meet that goal?
I don't know either.
Has there been money into the refinery that's going to make this thing on the coast of the Atlantic?
I don't know either.
Like, that's the other thing I don't understand about the carbon tax thing. Okay, we're collecting the money, but are we, like, I want to hear, like, some good news ideas, the initiatives that the money has been going into. You know, the trees. Has any money gone into the trees? What is the money that's being collected? And it's probably a small amount since this thing has been instituted. What has it been going into?
One thing Poilievre is going to have to do on day one, and hopefully knowing that it looks like they're going to win, hopefully they've started this process, is having somebody, an auditor on staff or an accountant or whatever, going through and saying, here are the things that we can cut immediately on day one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of them are going to be difficult.
Yeah.
If you decide now we're going to get rid of this national PharmaCare program that was passed or whatever else,
yeah.
But here's the billions of dollars we can save on day one. Uh-huh. And I think they have got some leeway at the beginning because Trudeau's so unpopular right now. If they do win, I think they can get away with some cutting right off the bat.
Well, I'll also be curious to see what they do on defense. You don't hear much by Polyev on defense, and you know the NATO people are breathing down our necks asking us for more money to meet the 2%. So do we start plugging money into defense? I don't see any money going anywhere. It's just going to be cut, cut, cut.
It may have to be, but we'll see. It's a very weird and interesting scenario we've got right now. Graham, we've been talking about federal politics for a second. I want to throw something at you that I proposed this a long time ago. I think it's an unenforceable rule, but I would like to see it tried.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to have in the House of Commons some rule imposed that you are required to answer the question you are asked. And that that the Speaker of the House has the power that if you are asked, Graham, what was the temperature outside today? And you say, well, you know, because of the deforestation of the Amazon rain basin and our government, blah, blah, no. And he can just jump in and go, stop.
Mm-hmm.
He asked you what the temperature was. What was it? I would love to see the Speaker of the House be given that kind of power to make the members answer or be kicked out of the House. If you don't answer it, you don't get to go on some sort of political rant. You are told to leave.
Well, I like to see that just in regular parliament, like scrums outside of the House.
But there's nothing you could do. There's no way you could enforce that.
No.
But you could in the House,
well,
theoretically.
Well, in the House, you do get that with the opposition people, like especially Polyev. He's very good at pointing out, you didn't answer the question, Mr. Prime Minister, and I'll ask it again. And he'll fun that way. So I think it helps when you have like politicians, because you can't do that on in the scrums. And there are some occasions, and Justin Trudeau is the worst offender, apparently. He will not answer questions. And it's just sort of a given that people in the scrums just don't even bother. They'll ask the question in another way, and he will still dance around it.
I don't know that Justin Trudeau is an expert at that, but there are a lot of them. I'm not going to just say that it's just Justin Trudeau that does this. It is all politicians at all different levels that have somehow gone. There's a secret society, a secret community college that all politicians go to when they get elected to learn how to not answer a question and to come up with some blathering emission.
Right.
That sounds like they're talking, but they're saying nothing. It just, I would love to be able to force them to answer. How much is the debt? Answer that. That shouldn't be a difficult question. Answer, don't say blah, blah, blah. Answer the question. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, you're kicked out.
No, well, they have to preface everything with platitudes and just like talking to fourth graders, basically, it seems like. Chrystia Freeland's the biggest offender of that. She talks to people, I find, like they're toddlers. The way that she enunciates things. But it's, you know, in the House of Commons, it's you're looking for that little soundbite that's going to be on the national news. And so they I guess what they do beforehand, they rehearse what they're going to say, regardless of what the question is. They get an idea of what the big thing is going to be that's raised in the House of Commons. They even have, like, the back and forth isn't just between parties. You have also liberals who will ask the government.
Yeah, set-up questions.
Set-up questions. And that often, you know, goes nowhere because the media figures out, well, you're just wasting time. So a 45-minute session and question period is actually really half an hour when you get rid of all the setup things.
I wish there was a way, and I'm loath to change tradition too much and come up with a whole new style of governance. But my goodness, it just seems like these days nobody will ever answer, and it's not just the liberals. You mentioned Freeland and Trudeau. It's not just them. Mm. Nobody will answer a question when asked.
Mm-hmm.
And in any other milieu, we would say, you were not asked that question.
Mm-hmm. It makes, you know, question period used to be a really exciting part of the back and forth of Parliament. And I remember I was a student at the University of Ottawa, and I'd go down there and I'd watch, you know, Brian Mulroney versus John Turner. Mm. And they didn't use notes. Like now you see even the Prime Minister Trudeau is there and he's reading notes. And it's like, Can you imagine? Winston Churchill never read notes in the floor of Westminster.
The only place where this idea could potentially be tried, and I would love to see it, is in the next the next prime minister candidates. When we get to the election and the leaders are having a debate, that one of the things is that the moderator has the microphone shut off button. And if they say, what are you going to do about whatever? And the person goes off and says, well, I was in Wawa last week and I met Bob, who's a farmer. And you don't get it. They say, that's not the question I asked. And if they don't answer it again, you just turn their microphone off and they lose the chance to speak. And that would be the one place you could do it. And I think it would be a fascinating exercise to see if it forced someone to actually give some answers.
Well, the election debates are so horrible now.
That would be one way to fix it.
You have like five people in the round there, and it's so frustrating, and they're talking over each other. I think they've tried that many times to cut off certain microphones, and you know, you have to go through the whole negotiation beforehand, and people don't go for that. And so it just becomes a frustrating thing. You can even have a two-way discussion like you do debate like you have in the U.S. You know, the last rounds between Biden and Trump were frustrating because, you know, you had both of them going over each other's sentences, and it was very frustrating. The old way of election debates are passe now.
They've learned. People have learned. It's too risky. So let's just run out the clock. And one thing that I would say, we started by talking about, are we in an election season? We might be, but if that were to happen, I would even be willing to get rid of the debate format entirely and have each of the leaders do 2 hours with a panel of say four good journalists from around the country who get to grill them for 2 hours and get to say, you're not answering the question. You're not answering the question. Mm-hmm. And not let them play the games. I think that would be fascinating.
I think just a boxing round would be best. Put them in a boxing ring and let
them
duke it
out. We tried that once.
We have tried that, haven't we?
Yeah. Ooh. If that happens again, you watch. Polyev's leadership will be gotten rid of, and they'll bring in some 6'9", 300-pound monster who will be the new leader just for that 1 week. And then they'll get rid of – they'll have another vote and get rid of him. It'll be
It would get ratings, that's for sure.
It would get ratings.
I'd love to see that between Trump and Biden, actually. Who would win in a boxing
match? Trump would win because have you seen Joe Biden moving lately?
Yeah, I guess. Trump has bone spurs. He wouldn't move very much either, and he's got balance issues himself. So.
We got to go here, but it's the idea of a Biden-Trump debate at this point is so ludicrous because most days Joe Biden doesn't know what year it is or what planet he's on. And Donald Trump is Donald Trump.
He's vicious.
But he's also Donald Trump. He's just, you know, stuff is...
He doesn't care.
There would be people on acid trips who could tune in and maybe make sense of what was going on, but nobody else. Anyway.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
You know, we've talked in times you've been here before about cartooning and things like that, but this week was interesting. You've got a piece, not a cartoon, you do have a cartoon, but also a column in the paper.
Written piece
in the paper tomorrow, because what happens occasionally with editorial cartoons is they don't just make people chuckle. Occasionally they enrage people.
They provoke.
Well, am I wrong to say they enrage some people?
Yes, but that's the job. That's what we're supposed to do. If we offend. We
challenge.
We get support. Half of the readership will support, and the other half are going to be upset. That's the nature of editorial cartooning. We're not. A lot of people think what we do is like Bugs Bunny or Blondie, or it's not that. We have to have a point. It's satire, and I know that's a big word for some people, but it's about politics, about punching up to the powers, and that's what we do.
It does seem, I would expect, that we live in a time when people are far more easily offended than they used to be, which is likely going to make more people angry about things they see that doesn't share their point of view.
Mm-hmm. And they're empowered by social media and what they read, and they're reading the same thing over and over and over. And the message points are the same. And with many of the issues that I cover, I know people are going to be appalled, but they use the same arguments over and over. It's very tiresome.
One of the things that I didn't realize until recently, and this just speaks to my lack of intellect, but one of the things I didn't realize until somewhat recently, months ago, was how much different your social media might be from my social media or someone else's, because it's all algorithms that is adjusting so you live in your own echo chamber.
In your own bubble, yeah.
And that really does make it so that you don't get exposed to other opinions like you would have once upon a time.
Mm-hmm.
That was very surprising. You know, when I first learned that was, I can't remember now, but it was the idea that I always just assumed that, well, you know what, Twitter, I open mine and you open yours and we're all looking at the same stuff, but we have a different point of view. It's entirely different.
Mm-hmm.
It's entirely different. And again, some people are going to say, well, of course it is. You're a big dummy. Like, but it just never dawned on me that every click was teaching my Twitter or my Facebook or whatever what to send me.
Right. It's custom making your or curating your interests, your likes. If you look at a clip of a YouTube video, it then somehow calculates, we got to show more of these sort of things in the algorithm. But the problem is it's the problem with newspapers, right? When you read a newspaper online, you only go to the bits that you want to look at that really interest you. Like the great thing about a paper copy is that you go through the paper and you read the entertainment and the sports and the business.
Or at least it's in front of you. You see that it's there. Yeah. Even if you don't read it, you know that it exists.
Right. But it, in many ways, social media has become that digitally. The bubble... You go to your bubble in the digital newspaper, but that's basically what social media has become. It's cultivated your interest into one convenient little package. But you waste so much time going through that. Like the scrolling is outrageous how much we waste time on that.
So there are some things, and the cartoon that some of these people were upset with you that led to this was about the Mideast conflict, but... How low, and when I say low, I mean down the pecking order, how low does it go that people get upset about? Do people still get upset about local things or Ontario things when you draw about Doug Ford? Do people get upset when you draw about Trudeau? Do people get upset, or is it just these giant, giant world events that people have such strong feelings on?
The world events like Gaza, Israel, are ones that I'm always going to get complaints from. Doesn't matter. And it could be the most balanced cartoon. And I believe that cartoon that the article's on tomorrow, it was very balanced. It was a comparative piece with what's going on in Ukraine. So I basically depicted Netanyahu and Putin as monsters. If it was just Netanyahu being portrayed as a monster, I would have probably gotten a lot more reaction that was negative. But because it was with Putin, it was almost, people can almost see, well, okay, well then you can't say it's anti-Israel, you can't say it's anti-Semitic because I'm casting Putin as a monster as well. But the thing is, I think people see, those who are familiar with my work know that I'm not a partisan cartoonist. A lot of the cartoons out there, you can tell what their political leanings are because it's day in and day out. It's always going to be something critical of Trudeau or critical of Polyev. And for me, I'm critical of whoever's in power, regardless of their affiliation. So one day I could be very critical of Trudeau, and the next day I'll be very critical of Doug Ford. And it could be the other way around. I did a critical one of Bonnie Crombie the other day that was critical of her and Polyev. I was able to get that into the same cartoon, because they're both against the carbon tax. And so I think people know that I'm not a partisan cartoonist. So I think that kind of jars some of them in a way. But I don't think that's our job. Our job is to go against any of the powers. And it's very easy when you have one party in control of the federal, and then as a different party in Queen's Park. And so we have that great situation right now.
Anybody know who Bonnie Crombie is in a cartoon yet?
Well, I think that was my third time that I've ever drawn her. So yeah. you have to use the labels early on.
Yeah, I was going to say. And the other thing about it is that, you know, earlier in the show, it's not just the substance of the cartoon. I know that in the past, even drawing certain people, you have to be very careful of how you portray certain people, or you will get accused of.
Yeah.
You know, and the whole, which is fun. Like if Jugmeet Singh's turban would be too large, or mm-hmm. Obama's ears too big. I mean, that was one in the States. I know somebody got, some cartoonist yep. got just, you know, yep. railed for that one. But isn't the whole point of cartooning generally exaggerating some feature or features? Doesn't every cartoon exaggerate features?
Yes, editorial cartoons, that's part of our instruments is caricature exaggeration of features. And with Obama and with Jagmeet Singh, both, you know, ethnic personalities, it's almost like there's a learning thing that happens with each one of these politicians that comes on. People have to get like a little bit of a learning thing. This is the way it's been for hundreds of years. If you're in politics, if you're going to lead, you are going to be subject to ridicule, to satire. And once you get over that hump, oh, you made Obama's lips too purple, or oh, what are you suggesting with his turban? Why are you doing that? You're racist. Then you almost have to rely on other people that are in the social media feeds to kind of instruct these people. Come on now, this is these politicians know this is part of our political culture. Ridicule, it comes with the territory, and it is very difficult sometimes, and it can be very challenging. But if you have a history with this, you can do it, and you can get over that hump. But there's always going to be a hump with every new politician that comes along.
Well, and I'll say this: I mean, for those who would say, "Oh, it's only exaggerations on people who have minority things," I can assure you, over the years, your portrayal of Fred Eisenberger, for example, by the end, he looked like Lurch from the Addams Family, the long face.
Very long face.
And different ones. Trudeau has changed in your cartoons yeah. to become very exaggerated, the long, sloping yeah. nose. And it's not, but we live in a time when people, I think, are looking for offense. I really do. I think people go out looking for what can I be offended by. Yeah. I wrote something today, and this is not related to your cartoon, I used a word uh-huh. in my column. And
the in collector the, column?
Yeah, it's about the oh, about yes, the yes. collector.
Fascinating story.
And Angelo Savelli, if you can yeah. look online and find it in the spec, I think you'd find it interesting. He's a really interesting guy who just passed away. But mm-hmm. And I referred to his collection as a menagerie of things. And someone wrote in just all fired up because menagerie means animals. And I was like, no, it means animals, or look at the definition further, or a collection of items or things. But this, like, I didn't think of all the things, of all the comments I thought I might get for this. Mm. I didn't think my use of one word would offend somebody, but again, I think some people just look for things to be offended by, and a cartoon would give them yeah. loads of opportunity.
For sure. And I think there's a lot of feigning of outrage and that sort of thing. And I find on social media, a lot of people aren't really actually, when they complain or go on about a cartoon, they're not actually talking to the person who drew it. They're talking to their bubble of people and trying to get them to get onto the pylon. And often that doesn't work, and people have to like swat them down and say, oh, don't be stupid. You know, this is job, and your outrage is a little bit over the top. Like there are a million other things to be really outraged about. And, but you know, if people are getting upset, then I'm making them think, maybe not in the way that I hope them to think, but at least I'm getting them to think.
All right, Graham, this is an ethical question. There's a story in the National Post today about a guy in Quebec, a young man in Quebec, who says he felt like the 20-year-old kid, by the way, who felt like the two little fingers on his left hand were not supposed to be there. Mm-hmm. That he felt that he was supposed to be born without them. They didn't belong to his body, he thought. He was uncomfortable with these two fingers, and he found a doctor who would amputate them for him. And I'm reading this story going, okay, you know what?
Dismembered.
There's got to be some medical ethics around this, that we just can't have people...
Was it cosmetic surgery?
Well, I don't know. But it seems to me that if you are believing that you've just got two fingers that don't belong to you, surely that's something you should be treated by with... like
careful
no psychology or something as opposed to
therapy
to just lopping up. Years ago on this show there was some we were talking about people who believe they were supposed to be born paralyzed and they like they believe this, and so they were going seeking doctors who would like snip their spinal columns,
so
and doctors would not do it. They were like, no, we're not paralyzing you on purpose. That's
so that
horrible.
People would have to care for them.
Well, I don't...
For the rest of their lives.
Who knows? But surely somewhere along the way here, there's got to be some medical ethics about just lopping off...
It sounds like a mental health issue. If you want to have your fingers cut off and the doctor actually does it, I mean...
Well, they found a surgeon at his local hospital agreed to an elective amputation in what is being described as the first case of digits amputation. For a rare and complex condition characterized by an intense desire to amputate a perfectly healthy body part, such as an arm or a leg.
What happens if you want to get married? You don't have a tendril there to put the ring on.
Yeah, that's right. When you get married, you extend your third finger to your wife now when you're... Yeah, that doesn't go so well. A tendril, nice word.
I use that often.
It just seems to me that this is, especially knowing... that in all likelihood, and it doesn't say it in the story, but in all likelihood, taxpayers probably paid for this surgery.
Sure.
Because why wouldn't they?
Well, we have end of life. Why not end of fingers?
I suppose. I suppose. It does seem to me that we have opened through some medical things that are going on. We have opened up some doors that I don't think we quite are... knowing how to deal with some of these
things. I'd like
to
know more of the story of this individual. Like, did this person, like, do things with, like, was his life that horrible? Was he threatening because he had four fingers instead of two? Like, what?
He says, according to this story, he says that at night he'd wake from nightmares that his fingers were burning or rotting. Mm-hmm. He was so desperate that he contemplated building a small makeshift guillotine to lop off the fingers, and instead the doctor said, no, we will do this. There are other examples of similar type things, but not exactly. In the other examples that they cite, one guy felt like his right leg should not have been on his body, and so he stuck it in a bucket of dry ice for 6 hours, damaging it so badly the doctors had no choice but to amputate it. But that was then, by the time he got there, that was... they had to treat him.
Frostbite and all that.
But it seems that this is a thing that I wonder, like, are we opening a door here that we won't know how to close it? And I mean, look, you mentioned MAID. MAID started as it was just going to be for people who were terminally ill. Mm-hmm. And it is far from that now. That you know, people say, oh, there's no slippery slope. There sure is a slippery slope.
Mm-hmm. No, it's very controversial now with mental health issues,
With mental health issues, and so...
And what's next,
Well, I can tell you what's next.
I can't live with four fingers, so end my life? Sort of thing?
Could be. I mean, I believe what's going to happen next with MAID. I don't know how we got into MAID, but anyway, I absolutely believe that we will soon allow children to choose it, which will be disastrous because we don't let them vote or drive or drink or anything else, but we're going to say you can end your life.
Yeah.
But no, I look at this and I just think how do we even begin to ethically, in medical ethics, how do we even begin to start working through some of the stuff if we say this is okay to do?
Well, and I'm thinking in my mind, well, what would make it easier? Would it be the patient has to pay for the procedure? But then that's violating the the Health Act, right? Because we don't pay for things like that. It's part of the tax system. So if it's related to your health, mental health situation, then maybe ethically, you know, it was discussed and it was determined that the individual would be entitled to having the fingers chopped off.
But if we have a mental health problem, should that translate into physical deformations intentionally? Or should we say, like, clearly your fingers are there and there was not, according to the story, there was nothing wrong with them. They weren't withered up. They weren't broken. They weren't unusable. They were fine.
Well, maybe that's what the doctor should have told this person. He said, take a mallet to these fingers and we'll deal with it. But I'm not just chopping off like perfectly good fingers. I don't know. It's a bit of a mind warp, this whole issue. And who knows? I don't know. I don't know what to say.
No. I think we're. It's not just this. I mean, this story is just the latest thing.
But fingers is a very simple thing. There's other parts of the body get taken off for other reasons that I don't think we need to get into.
That's true.
What's the next thing going to be, you know?
But if someone walked into a doctor now, and we won't get into that other one because it's way more complicated, and you're right, and I hadn't even, but if someone walked in and said, like what I said before, we talked about this situation, I really believe that I was meant to be in a wheelchair. I really believe that I'm supposed to be paralyzed. Or there was a woman that I read about some time ago who put acid in her own eyes because she really believed she was supposed to be blind. But if someone walks in and says, I really believe, doctor, that I should be blind, can you please excise my eyeballs? Are we supposed to start doing that?
We have an eclipse next Monday. I know what they can do. Sorry, I had to bring that up.
Save the medical system some money. But
if you're in the totality line, then you're lucky.
It seems like we are... If that was the case, if someone could walk in and say, I believe I should be blind, please take out my eyes, and we have doctors saying, sure, I'll do that.
It's almost cosmetic surgery, though, you're getting into there. That's what you want, and you're going to displace someone who really needs, like, life-saving surgery or something for a cosmetic procedure.
What if you were to say, yeah, we'll do that, and we're not there? Well, I don't think we're there. What if we said, though, yeah, fine, we'll do that, but you're signing this document that says no treatment that would normally be given to a blind person will be given to you free. You will pay for any future treatment that would come. As someone who naturally would have an accident or naturally born blind, we have things built into our healthcare
system. So you take yourself out willingly from
coverage.
From the coverage.
So that taxpayers don't have to be responsible for you. Mm-hmm. We'll let you do it, but just don't come to us then looking for future help. But you know, that would probably a year later lead to a lawsuit.
There would be lawsuits, yes. And we'd be talking about it ad nauseum in the news cycle.
Yeah.
And let's not. Let's not.
People can read that story, by the way. The headline is, Quebec man has two healthy fingers amputated to relieve body integrity dysphoria. That's you can read about it if you want. It's a really interesting story that gets into some really complex stuff. Let's move to something far lighter, but yet really possibly...
Can't wait.
...disgusting.
Okay. Oh, geez.
So this is from a few days ago, because we're... what day is today? Today is April the 5th, so April Fool's was a few days ago, earlier this week. There were a number of companies that put out April Fool's joke products that aren't real, but that they were, you know, just, you know... Let's have a joke. Let's put out a fake, phony April Fool's product.
On social media.
Right? On social media. So you tell me of these products, whether, even though it was a joke and it does not exist, whether you would eat said product. Because they're all edible products,
I'm
all
picky.
Right?
I'm picky.
All right, so
there'll be eggs. I don't
Pringles,
eggs.
Which one of their products is sour cream and onion Pringles.
Yum.
Yes, Pringles announced that it was introducing sour cream and onion soda.
No.
with a photo of the cans of sour cream and onion pop.
Yeah, that's not a good thing. I mean... I mean, the fruit things like grape and cherry, that's enough. But now you're getting into a different domain.
Altogether. Here's what the ad said. Indulge in the creamy richness of sour cream, the savory kick of onion, and the comforting heartiness of potato, all in a crave-worthy, salty, and utterly irresistible soda experience. I love the fact that they had cans made for this to better make it seem plausible.
I'm going to gag. You're going to make me gag.
All right.
On air.
You're not going with that one. Okay. 7-Eleven came up with 7-Eleven House of Miracles was the name of, I guess, the company. Big Bite Hot Dog Sparkling Water.
Yeah, sure.
Sparkling water that tastes like hot dogs.
Yeah. But they've done that on those reality shows. You know, you got to drink like the different foods. And it was on Jimmy Fallon, the Jimmy Fallon show. They had to drink hot dog water, wiener water.
But see, that is a thing that actually exists. You boil the water.
Yeah.
You boil the hot dogs in the water. And I'm sure people have consumed that before. I'm sure it's happened.
And would it be that bad? I don't.
You know what it would do? It would fully lacquer the inside of your mouth with a greasy film.
A lot of
film.
Nitrates.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It'd be very salty. I mean, if you cooled it down, like drinking it warm would probably not taste good.
It could be a flavor enhancer.
It'd be like tea.
It'd greasy be like tea. Or ham. It's like ham juice.
That sounds worse than what we said before. Ham juice.
Can you imagine?
Throw it into a blender and make a ham shake.
I could see it in cartons at Fortino's. Ham juice next to the eggnog.
Well, see, some people look at eggnog and say that's as bad as ham juice would be. Yeah. Omaha Steaks, meat company Omaha Steaks.
Yeah.
They came out with a flavor enhancing meat spray.
Mm.
Omaha Fog, Hog Haze, and Cock-a-Doodle-Doo, D-E-W.
Yeah.
So, yes, you can spray the flavor of steak, chicken, and pork on whatever you are eating.
Wow. So
this was an idea I think could work.
You know, if you go vegan, but you like all those products where not vegan, vegetarian.
I can't believe it's not bacon.
Yeah, and you can spray that on as an essence to flavor your vegetables. It might be good for people who don't like vegetables.
I think there's something to this. I think this idea could work.
Sure.
Spray flavor. I mean, as long as it tastes
well, they have,
somewhat okay.
You do know they have spray butter in the U.S. I think they brought it up here where you can actually spray. It's like a liquid form of butter on like corn on the cob.
If you can have cheese in a can, spray cheese, then you can have anything in any form.
Yeah. Edible oils, they call it.
Yeah. All right, macaroni and cheese, everybody's favorite, mac and cheese up here. They've had a variety of different flavors of mac and cheese over the years.
Cauliflower flavor.
Have they?
Yes.
Ugh.
Not cauliflower flavor, it's made with cauliflower, powder of cauliflower.
All right, well, this is way better. For April Fools, Post and Kraft, cereal company Post and macaroni manufacturer Kraft announced the release of multicolored mac and cheese with the fruity flavor of Fruity Pebbles. Fruity Pebble mac and cheese.
Okay, this isn't real, right, Scott?
It is not real.
It's not real, so I get that.
Although there's a great ad picture with it looking, it's multicolored. I don't know how it would stay multicolored because it all blends together.
No, it would go a funny color,
I think. It's fruity, it's cheesy, it's your two favorite comfort foods together at last, they say.
I think that's a fail.
You're not going to go with the Fruity
down.
Pebbles?
No.
Okay, here's one you might like. Scotch Brand, maker of tape.
Mm-hmm.
Came out with Scotch Brand Scotch Whiskey.
I could see that, right?
I have no idea what it does. It taste like tape, or is it like a theoretically? If it did, would it taste like tape? Or
well, you get that tape that has that evergreen kind of smell. You know, is that what they mean, or is there a generic tape smell?
I'm not sure, but I mean, there was a photo of it, and it looked like a fine bottle of scotch with the tape. Scotch tape. Like
minty.
Font and
it would be minty, right? So it'd be like a Bailey's whiskey, I guess, right? Or I don't know, like a mint Bailey's.
Who knows?
Whiskey.
It would stick to your tongue. It would have an adhesive quality to it.
There would be a lacquer kind of thing.
A lacquer adhesive, yes.
Yeah,
by the way, for people who are listening, if you're just joining us, these are all April Fool's jokes, but some of them have, you know, who knows? There might be some potential here.
Yeah.
Pepsi.
Uh huh.
which it Pepsi. I mean, this is one of those companies that is into everything now. So they don't, Pepsi is not just Pepsi anymore. Like they have 50 companies probably under their umbrella.
Yeah.
And they have, one of their companies is the, have you ever gone to the store and seen those extra super hot chips? Oh. Extra flame and hot chips?
Yes, my children love those.
Mm, right, okay. So this, they came out on April Fool's Day with the extra flame and hot milk.
Which is
a fun twist because milk is usually the thing you drink to settle your mouth down after you've eaten something really hot.
Couldn't you just get sriracha sauce and put it in like, you know, liquid chocolate milk and then mix it around, right?
Of course you could.
I bet you it has a unique flavor.
I would try that. I mean, I have at home right now in our fridge, to my wife's chagrin, because she is not a purveyor
of hot.
I have an entire shelf of hot sauce jammed, and I've got about another 30 down in the cupboard downstairs that have not been opened yet.
I love hot sauce.
And they are of all different levels of spicy, from Tabasco, which is basically nothing.
Have you done the thing like where you have to write out a little legal note that says that you won't sue if you try some of these really hot ones?
No, in fact, I got a note today from about something that's going on. I'm going to talk to him later. But the guy who runs Dawson's Hot Sauce on Barton Street, Hamilton Company, great hot sauces, and just cracked open one of their, I can't remember the name of it now. I'm sorry, I'm not doing a good ad for them. But they, on their bottles, they mark the heat scale out of 10.
Right.
And I just cracked open the one that is 11 out of 10. It's their hottest sauce, and I love it.
Yeah.
Now, it gives me hiccups immediately, but my mouth is fine. You know what? I'm thinking now I may have to try mixing in with milk and seeing if I can make flaming milk.
Yeah. Well, for those who don't like the heat, milk is the elixir for getting rid of the
offsetter.
Hot. So it's an offsetter,
it
right?
It may not do anything.
It may just, what's the point then?
You know, the other thing is my wife always mixes up in the morning. She'll make a yogurt thing.
Mm-hmm.
I could just put hot sauce in the yogurt.
It'll
neutralize each other, but I'm kind of liking this idea.
Yeah, I think that's a winner with me. That could work.
Yeah, I think some of these companies, they thought they were being funny, but they may have actually stumbled onto something that we should explore further.
I'm just thinking about those chicken wings that I'm going to have after this show somewhere in the city of Hamilton, and I'm getting very hungry.
Yeah, hot chicken wings. All right. Graham, thanks for coming in today.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
Yeah, Graham McKay, you can see his cartoons in The Spectator. You can go tomorrow online. If you don't have a copy of the paper, go online to thespec.com and read the piece that he's written. It's a really interesting, I read it today. I got a bit of a head start on this one, but about editorial cartooning and taking chances and
boundaries
and all that kind of thing. It's actually a very, very interesting look at that job and how you do that and the blowback and all the rest. It is well worth taking a look at. Thank you to Ben for all your work today, as always. Really appreciate it. To Jordan for all of his work lining everything up for this whole week. Folks, have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. If you have not already, go out and find yourself some of those glasses for Monday so you're not in the hospital. even though as I've said a million times, I'm quite confident that if you do go and get them, if enough of us get them, it will guarantee that it's overcast and it will not be visible. That's how it works.
Come on, Shelley Marriage.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.